Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with the Reason Audio Podcast. Today we are talking with Governor Gary Johnson. He's the two-term former governor of New Mexico who is running for the Libertarian Party as president, to become president of the United States. Governor, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
First off, we recently witnessed the second presidential debate. Was there anything noteworthy, as far as you're concerned, in what transpired at the debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think that they set new levels of incivility. Clearly, the first 30 minutes went by where there was not one mention of policy. It was everything about not voting for Trump. It was everything about not voting for Clinton.
Well, you have to admit they made pretty good cases against each other, didn't they?
I think that they did. Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with both of them.
So talk a little bit about how you would have provided a different set of answers to some of those key questions, and I'll run through them real quickly. Because, you know, one of the things that you've been pushing for as a Libertarian Party candidate, a third party candidate who at various points has been polling between, you know, 7% and 10% or 11% nationally. What would you have said about Obamacare, taxes, spending, Syria and foreign policy that would have added real substance to the debate, do you think?
Well, small government, that really I am all about small government. Myself and Bill Weld were not wallflowers, having served as governors of our respective states, New Mexico, Massachusetts, heavily Democrat, getting reelected by being really over the top fiscally conservative, small government. Neither one of us raised taxes a penny. I would have pointed out the certainty of a Johnson-Weld White House that taxes will not go up. They will only go down. But of course, that would be commensurate upon the legislature, Congress passing that legislation.
Well, talk about spending as well, because Trump said, hey, I'm going to cut your taxes. And Hillary more or less acknowledged she's going to raise them. But you also, in an official response to the debate, you said, you know, part of Trump's problem is that he would cut taxes so far that debt would just spiral out of control. So how about spending? You'll keep taxes, you'll hold the line on taxes or cut them, or and cut them, but what would you do with spending?
Well, the certainty that spending won't go up either. Now, when I say spending won't go up, currently Medicaid and Medicare are entitlements. They're open-ended. And so unless they are reformed, there won't be controls on spending. But we're the only candidates that are saying it's not an option to not reform, to look at reforms for Medicaid and Medicare. It's not an option to not look at reforming Social Security. It's not an option to say that we're going to increase spending for the military when, in fact, we should be decreasing spending for the military also, that wouldn't affect America's readiness or the ability of this country to provide an invincible national defense.
Let's talk about defense and foreign policy in just a second. But while we're talking about entitlements, what about Obamacare? Hillary Clinton in the debate said, hey, you know what, we're going to keep the good parts. We're going to get rid of everything else, which is an ever-growing part of the program, it seems, based on recent polls and surveys and cost estimates. Donald Trump basically just said, we'll let people maybe, he said her plan's terrible, my plan will be great. What would you do about Obamacare and insurance costs, which rank right up there with the economy for, you know, what people are most concerned about?
Well, I have always said, it's amazing to me that Trump appears as though he believes he's going to take over the role of Santa Claus, that there are no constitutional limits to him being president, that he's going to somehow wave a magic wand. And he talks about his magic wand and the fact that he would repeal Obamacare. Well, if I could wave a magic wand, I would repeal Obamacare, but I don't think that that's going to happen. But I do support a free market approaches to healthcare, recognizing that healthcare and free market are about as far removed as they possibly can be. I'm always slain by those that that look at insurance for the reform of our medical care, when in fact this should be about patients, this should be about doctors, this should be about the healthcare being provided, and this should be about government taking a role to genuinely blow the lid off of competition. That would be the free market approach.
So what does that mean specifically? Does that mean being able to sell insurance policies, you know, anywhere in the country, kind of the way auto insurers do? Does it mean getting rid of occupational licensing or restrictions on building out hospital beds or medical facilities? What, you know, what are you thinking about there?
Well, when it comes to insurance, I reject the notion that we should have insurance to cover ourselves for ongoing medical need. Much like having car insurance, catastrophic injury or illness, we don't have insurance on our cars to cover ongoing maintenance. We don't have insurance to cover ourselves for oil changes, for flat tires. These are things that we pick up. I think having insurance to cover ourselves for ongoing medical need would be much analogous to having grocery insurance, something that doesn't exist. Imagine if we had grocery insurance, Nick, going into the grocery store. First of all, there'd be no pricing on any of the shelves because you and I have grocery insurance that's mandated by the government. Why would we buy hamburger when we could buy filet? Well, of course, we're going to buy filets. So in a free market approach to healthcare, there wouldn't be insurance to cover yourselves for ourselves for ongoing medical needs.
So
there would be insurance to cover ourselves for catastrophic injury and illness. And if we had a genuinely competitive blow the lid off of competition for ongoing medical need, I'm going to guess that it would cost one-fifth of what it currently costs. But doctors would benefit. You and I as consumers would benefit. We'd pay less. Doctors would make more because they didn't have to deal with the bureaucracy of health insurance. I talked to a radiologist yesterday after our 2 days ago after our rally in New Mexico. He says, I'm a radiologist, he said, and I have no idea what my services get billed for.
Yeah. So what about one of the things that, you know, many people, even critics of Obamacare say, you know, the saying that insurers have to insure everybody, that they can't say, no, you're too big of a risk. You know, that guaranteed carry clause. I know that you're against an individual mandate saying that you have to buy insurance. Where do you stand on that question of whether or not insurers should be forced to take all comers at capped costs?
Well, that is an issue that is out there. And when you recognize that that prior to this getting enacted, and it may in fact still be the case because it hasn't, the affordable health care has not been fully enacted. But that is an issue I think that government could have undertaken. But obviously that's a pool, that pool would be government subsidized, much like the health care. Right now, the Affordable Health Care Act is half of it, I believe, is government subsidy at this point. It just discourages the government's constantly drawing lines of eligibility. And you as a person in the workforce, you and I as citizens in this country, we're very cognizant of these lines of eligibility. And gee, do we go out and work harder to make more money? Or gosh, if we make more money, we're going to cross over a line of eligibility. So productivity in a system that does not reward going out and doing more, that it oftentimes rewards you for just taking a break rather than making more money, which is what so many of these government programs are. That's the difference between the two.
Let's talk about Syria specifically, but foreign policy more generally. You had a couple of slip-ups where you failed to identify Aleppo in a conversation with a cable news host. You also kind of stumbled on talking about foreign leaders in the world, you know, who's running North Korea, all of that kind of stuff.
And I really take exception to stumbling on foreign leaders that I admire. Here it is, what, 2.5 weeks or 2 weeks after that?
Yes, go ahead.
I still can't identify a foreign leader that I really respect. And then not being able to name the leader of North Korea, the question was, can you name me the leader of North Korea? And I said, you've got to be kidding me. Really? She goes, yeah, really. I can't. Anyway.
Well, here's a question for you about, you know, libertarians in general, small L, capital L in the Libertarian Party. They're often seen as not caring about foreign policy a lot or not really knowing what they're talking about. How do you assure people? And I actually spoke with a millennial voter who voted for you in 2012. Definitely is not voting for Trump, doesn't want to vote for Hillary. But he said to me, you know, if Gary Johnson needs to reassure me that he takes foreign policy seriously and that he knows what he's talking about, how can you reassure people who are in that position?
Well, that what upsets me is that because you have to dot the I's and cross the T's on the names of foreign leaders or geographic locations, that somehow qualifies you, and I'm talking specifically now about Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. that somehow qualifies you to put our men and service women in harm's way, end up dying, they end up hurt, maimed, psychologically impacted for the rest of their lives, and that hundreds of thousands of innocent people are dying in these conflicts. That's what upsets me so much about the criteria to be able to dot I's, cross the T's, and that gives you qualification then to lead this country down the path of putting everyone in harm's way, our military, the people in these countries that are so negatively impacted.
What is your capsule summary? What's your general approach to foreign policy, and how does it differ from what you think Trump's is and what Hillary's appears to be?
Well, my general approach is skeptic, that we need a skeptic in the White House to actually untangle all of what is happening. I am not receiving national security briefings. I would love to know, and I'm just assuming, that a lot of promises were made to the Free Syrian Army, and if they would offer opposition to Assad, that they would get U.S. support of some sort. I'm just guessing here, Nick, but skeptical and wanting to know, wanting to understand all of what the agreements that have been made and by whom and how do you go about unentangling all of this, and a recognition, bottom line, when it comes to Syria, that the only way out of Syria is to join hands with Russia diplomatically to make this happen. And to say anything otherwise is living in fairyland. When Hillary Clinton talks about creating safe zones, well, what does that entail? She says no boots on the ground. Well, that's also not true. If that means special forces, that's still boots on the ground. And when it comes to safe zones, well, now we're going to set up target areas for refugees. But guess what? It's not going to be refugees that the Syrian army is now going to bomb. It's going to be under the notion that this is where the Free Syrian Army is hanging out because it's a safe zone. So what they make sound, what Hillary makes sound very simple and a way going forward is just is just this added complexity to what ultimately ends up to be a less safe world, not a more safe world.
In recently, after the Trump audio tape came out where he's talking about effectively or essentially assaulting women as his one of his signature pickup moves, it's a tape that's 15 years old. Do you think, and you've come out with a sharply worded statement about that, do you think that that kind of hot mic incident and kind of blast from the past, is it relevant? And what does it say about Donald Trump and the Republican Party that nominated him to be their presidential candidate?
Well, I think it is relevant, and it's not 15 years old. It's 11 years old.
Excuse me, yes.
And I think he, Donald Trump himself, has made the statement over and over again that he's not going to waver in what he does, that he's been the way he is for a long time, and that he will continue to be that person. So, look, hypocrisy is the one unforgivable, saying one thing and doing another. I am not being a hypocrite in saying I have never engaged in that kind of conversation. Locker room conversation, certainly, but locker room conversation that, in my opinion, degrades women, no. I haven't partaken in that, and I don't think the majority of people do. But for those that do engage in that kind of conversation, I don't think that those people should be aspiring or potentially becoming president of the United States.
In at the website Red State, your running mate, Governor Bill Weld, former Governor Bill Weld, another two-term governor, the Republican governor of Massachusetts, invites Republicans who are disgusted by Donald Trump to consider the Johnson-Weld alternative. He calls you honest Gary Johnson, a man without guile. Is that accurate? And is, you know, how do we know that there are not, you know, these types of tapes? And we'll talk about Hillary's secret transcripts that have come to light through WikiLeaks in a second. But how do we know that you're an honest man and a straight shooter?
Well, of course, a rightful question, if you will. But in a way, it's not a question mark. Bill Weld and I both served two terms each in heavily Democrat states as Republicans. And we weren't wallflowers. So it's not so much a guess on the part of Gary Johnson and is this the person he says he is when you do have two terms to look at. Having been governor. And myself personally, I've always lived by the credo that if you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. If you tell the truth, you acknowledge mistakes, and that we all make mistakes, but acknowledging them, there's no quicker way to fix mistakes than acknowledging them. And I have always, always believed that the one unforgivable in life is saying one thing and doing another. Bill Weld and I are not hypocrites. And you know what? It's an open book, subject to scrutiny. Have at it.
You told Albuquerque's KOAT that you are fielding immense interest from, quote, dozens of Republican officials. In such a massive amount, quote, that the campaign can't even begin to deal with it at the moment. Republicans are, you know, jumping off this sinking ship that seems to be Donald Trump since this tape came out. He was already starting to lose. I mean, he was already behind in the polls. Who are the people who are contacting you? Are they talking about endorsing you? And can you name names? Are there any high-level Republicans who have said, you know what, Governor Johnson, I think you're the best way forward. I'm going to endorse you.
Well, I think you've seen dozens that have come out publicly and said they can no longer support Donald Trump. Behind the scenes, Gary Johnson, Bill Weld, you're our vote regarding endorsements. Nick, I firsthand understand how difficult. It's one thing to say I'm not supporting the nominee of your party, which is really unprecedented. And I think all those names are pretty well out there in the press right now. It's another, and I think by I don't think it's all that difficult a conjecture to recognize that, well, where does their alternative lie? Naming names regarding those politicians that are considering endorsing us, and I have to believe that many of them will. I'm gonna protect the innocent. I'm not gonna put anybody in a position of having to to affirm or deny something that I'm saying. This is something that they're gonna have to come to grips with, and I do believe we are the principled alternative.
What is the biggest stumbling block for a traditional Republican or a conventional Republican, a still registered Republican, from embracing the Johnson-Weld Libertarian Party ticket? I mean, you talk the small government, the limited government game that they say they're in favor of. So what's holding more people back who are, you know, from a Republican or a, you know, broadly right-wing or left-wing small government perspective from just saying, hell, let's go full libertarian this time around?
Well, let me just ask the same question, maybe here with a little louder volume. What on earth, Republicans, are you thinking? Backing Donald Trump based on what he has said? Forget about everything that he said prior to 4 days ago, but add to it what he said 4 days ago. You're going to cease to be a party if this is something that you're going to continue to embrace.
So another form of hypocrisy, or at least, a massive difference between public and private behavior came up during the debate related to Hillary Clinton and the WikiLeaks emails that were, filched from or pinched from John Podesta's account, her campaign director, who was also the former chief of staff of Bill Clinton, started Center for American Progress, big lobbying firm as well in D.C. In one of these transcripts to a group in Brazil, Hillary Clinton seemed to be, or she said, look, it's, you've got private positions that you talk about in settings like these and speeches where there is no press, there are no outside people. It might be a group of donors or an interest group or your fellow legislators. You have one position in private and you have another position in public. Is that the way that politicians have to play the game in order to get anything done? Or is that as hypocritical as presenting yourself as a kind of family man who loves women in public and then is talking about grabbing their crotches in private?
Well, I think it's completely analogous. I say the same things regardless of who the audience is. And in this case, that is really damning. That's the worst about politics, saying one thing and doing another. Look, I'm representing you, but I have to say that I'm not necessarily representing you. The worst. And this is what Hillary Clinton is guilty of, that she knows best. She's going to try and tell you that she's working on behalf of you, when the reality is that she's working on behalf of her. And that's what I hate about politics. That's what I hate about politicians. And this is Hillary Clinton right here. This says it all.
Do you think your approach, and your colleague, your running mate, Bill Weld, says you are without guile, which is oftentimes held as a negative, not just for politicians, but adults in general, is that kind of openness and transparency, would that help? I mean, we're in an era where people have less and less confidence in the ability of government to do anything, first off, but then especially to be honest or to act honorably in things. Are you thinking that you disagree with a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters on stances, on some things you're right there with them in terms of civil liberties and foreign policy for the most part? But in other ways, they dislike your economic policy or your economic freedom policy. But do you think this will appeal to disgruntled Democrats who are like, you know what, I don't want to play that game anymore. I want a guy who's a straight shooter, even if I disagree with him.
Well, I hope it appeals to everybody. That's what I hope. And based on my experience in my life, it is appealing. And if this whole thing ends up short because we are honest, we do tell the truth. And in that context, Nick, that's, you know, that's these goffs, if you want to call them goffs. The fact that I subject myself, and this is not an excuse, but here's the reality. I subject myself to 6 hours of interviews every single day. There's no questions that are pre-written. There's no anticipation of what's going to get asked. And in that context, do you know everything? No, you don't. Aleppo. Gosh, how about Syria? The Syrian city of Aleppo. What should we? Oh my gosh! Of course, Syrian city, Aleppo. Aleppo, though, for me. Well, Aleppo, I'm thinking acronym, and I'm not trying to make an excuse here. 90% of Americans don't know what Aleppo is, but 90% of Americans aren't running for president of the United States either. So no excuse on anything. Anything's fair, but fair is saying the same things in front of the same in front of regardless of the group. When Bernie Sanders supporters stand up and say, hey, I'm opposed to TPP because it's all about crony capitalism. You know what? There might be some elements in there that are crony capitalistic, but reality is it makes things better. And then going on to defend why it makes things better. I do believe crony capitalism is alive and well. Crony capitalism is when the government picks winners and losers. Free market, by definition, is devoid of government interference.
Talk a little bit about why would Hillary Clinton, you know, one of the things that's amazing about all of this what she was saying in secret was that she believed in a hemispheric free trade zone with open borders, movement, free movement of people, goods and services, of knowledge, of culture, which sounds pretty libertarian to me. And I know, you know, you're the only candidate out of the four candidates with any national reach, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Jill Stein, and you. You're the only one who is not protectionist when it comes to trade, and you're also the only one who is actually envisioning a world in which people are freer to cross borders rather than less free to do that. Why would Hillary Clinton be ashamed of being a free trader? Why would she be afraid of allowing people from poor countries to move to wealthy countries and from people from wealthy countries being able to invest in, travel to, and trade with poor countries?
Well, that's what would be wonderful, to have a debate made up of with Nick Gillespie as the moderator in a debate. And you could probably get me a point. Point being, there's some real differences between the candidates. And to be able to point out these differences and just have a very civil debate and discussion on the issues, as opposed to he said, she said, and it sounds more like divorce court, as opposed to what a debate and a discussion should be about these issues. When you look at big government versus small government, when you look at civil liberties, when you look at drug policy, they have not yet once talked about the legalization of marijuana. Do they support it? Don't they support it? Which makes you think that there are some pre-submitted questions to all this. We have the highest incarceration rate of any country in the world. Why is that the case? Black Lives Matter. The skepticism regarding our military interventions. Hillary's support of arming the Free Syrian Army, probably recognizing that those arms were going to end up in the hands of the Islamists, in the hands of ISIS. And yes, free trade and immigration, which Donald Trump should be hung on that beautiful wall that he's going to build across the border.
Who... Who is on your short list for key cabinet positions? Obviously, Bill Weld is the vice president. You've talked openly about how you guys would be running a lot of things in concert with one another. But who are you thinking about for attorney general, for secretary of treasury, defense, and state?
You know, I have always been well served, and I've gotten into trouble in this campaign kind of violating what I've always said that that I'm about, and that is I'm not predisposed to anybody. Come apply, I'm going to hire the best, the brightest, and in that context, having served as governor of New Mexico, I was just blown away by how many qualified people came and applied for the jobs in New Mexico government, saying that philosophically they aligned with me, that they were going to make my agenda happen, which was really all about smaller government, best product, best service, lowest price. I have a feeling that if you take the Department of Defense as an example, I have a feeling there will probably be a line a city block long with those, with individuals, qualified individuals, that would stand up and receive the appointment of being Secretary of Defense, that would say, yeah, we can cut the defense spending by 20%. Here's how we can do it. Here's my experience, and we will have a national defense second to none, that it will be invincible, and here's how we move forward. So
you would lay out, here's the broad objective for defense. We want to cut spending significantly without reducing the ability of the department to do what it's supposed to do, which is provide safety and security to the American people and territory. And then you would interview people to fulfill that.
And in the case of having been governor, I did have there was a screening process. A number of people, half a dozen people that I had screening, who I finally interviewed. But I interviewed everyone for every one of these positions. And like I say, it was a wonderful process, and I would have that same process as president of the United States. Look, come apply. There's no positions that have been promised ahead of time. Nobody's been promised a job in this administration.
There are recent polls by Gallup and others. For a long time, Americans wanted divided government, and it seemed to be a kind of way of minimizing or moderating the extremes in, you know, whether it's an extreme towards a Republican vision of government or Democratic government. But, you know, we keep getting with brief instances in between over the past 20 or so years, we'll have a Democratic president, a Republican Congress, Republican president, a Democratic Congress, et cetera. How would a Johnson-Weld administration create unity, since you would have absolutely nobody in Congress who is from your party in any way, shape, or form?
Well, how about the term civility? That civility returned to all this. That yes, you can have a varied opinion, but right now Republicans want to kill Democrats and vice versa. Democrats are looking to kill Republicans. Does anybody believe that the polarity in Congress is going to get any better given an election of a Trump or Clinton? No, it's going to be further from that. Well, put a couple of guys, Johnson, Weld, right down the big six-lane highway middle of all this, fiscally conservative, socially inclusive, skeptical about our military inventions, free trade. You know what? You can link up with a little bit of that on either side of the aisle and maybe actually get things done. So that's the pitch, is, hey, you can have disagreements, but let's just do it civilly. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that both sides of the aisle could come together with if you actually had what I'll call an arbiter in chief, as opposed to a continuation of the polarity that is there.
What would be the number one legislative priority in a Johnson camp? You get elected What the first day of work, what's at the top of your to-do list?
It's to submit a balanced budget to Congress. So in the first 100 days, we're pledging to submit a balanced budget to Congress, which is very encompassing, because that's going to speak volumes to defense policy. That's going to speak volumes when it comes to health care, Medicaid, Medicare. That's going to speak volumes as to being able to sustain Social Security into the future. It covers a whole lot of bases when you start talking about a balanced budget.
What are the key things that you're planning on doing between now and Election Day to get more votes, to get more visibility, to get more influence? Do you have any October surprises of your own up your sleeve?
No surprises, but we're nimble and taking advantage of really invitations that do come pretty darn spur of the moment. So to have the flexibility to respond to those invitations, that's where we're at right now.
All right. Well, we will leave it there. We have been talking with Governor Gary Johnson. He's the former two-term head of the New Mexico government. As a Republican, he's running for president on the Libertarian Party ticket. Governor, thanks for talking to Reason.
Nick, thank you very much. We'll talk to you later.
You bet.
All right.
For Reason's podcast, I'm Nick Gillespie. Look us up at iTunes, SoundCloud, Reason.com, YouTube/ReasonTV, and go to Reason.com/podcast for every possible feed you could want to stick your snout in. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.